Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, our relationships with and impacts upon that environment. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away this week, so co-hosting with me is Executive Director of Recycle Utah, Carolyn Walra.
Hello.
Carolyn, thanks for joining us. And on the phone, our first guest is Zach Frankel. He's the Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council. Utah Rivers Council is a nonprofit environmental advocacy group. And Zach, you can add to that if you want, but you're here to talk about two projects of water diversion, one with respect to Bear River and another one with respect to Lake Powell. So first of all, thanks for joining us this morning, Zach.
Oh, thank you for having me and good morning.
Yeah, so let's start with Bear River. Give us a little update and status on that. First, for our listeners, give us a little thumbnail sketch about Bear River itself, its location, its headwaters, and its importance to the environment and ecosystems.
Yeah, and let me give you a little background on why these two gigantic water projects are being proposed right now. So a lot of folks don't realize that Utah is the number one highest per person municipal water user in the country. And unfortunately, we've been stuck up at number one or number two per person water use for decades now. And that's largely because of sort of our background water policies. And because of our high water use, there are two very large water projects being proposed, the Lake Powell Pipeline and the Bear River Development. And the Bear River Development is a gigantic new water project that would divert the Bear River before it enters the Great Salt Lake. So the Bear River is the largest water source that enters the surface of the Great Salt Lake. It's the largest surface water to the Great Salt Lake. It provides about 60 to 70% of the surface water each year to the Great Salt Lake. And, you know, the thing that us Utahns sometimes forget because we live here and it's so close to home is that the Great Salt Lake is the largest wetland ecosystem remaining in the American West. And so protecting the Bear River from being diverted is sort of on the backs of all of us as Utahns to make sure this massive ecosystem continues to exist, because it provides habitat for 240 different species of migratory birds coming from all over the Western Hemisphere, every country in South and Central America, and as far west as Siberia, and of course all of North America. Birds are stopping over on their migrations across the globe to the Great Salt Lake, and they depend on the Bear River because the Great Salt Lake's flows are so dependent on that river to exist.
Okay, so the Bear River is a important, almost, what, primary source of fresh water into the Great Salt Lake.
That's right, that's right. Okay. And it's being proposed by a state agency under Governor Gary Herbert called the Utah Division of Water Resources, which is proposing a $2.5 billion water project to divert the Bear River before it enters the Great Salt Lake and put it in a pipe and send it to the lawns of the Wasatch Front so that people, you know, have lawn water. Although there's a dozen less expensive alternatives than this project to provide water for the future of Wasatch Front residents, you know, the lobbyists at the State House are really eager to get this money in their pockets, and they're really eager to initiate $2 billion of new spending. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just curious. What this pipeline is, some roughly 90 miles long, that would divert water, like you say, from the river. It would also build dams along the river, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're going to build at least three dams. One of the dams that's being discussed for a proposal is actually inside the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge. They're actually talking about putting a dam in a bird refuge. because they want to store 220,000 acre feet of water, which is enough water for a city of over a million people. And so they want three dams to store all that water. And the impacts, in addition to the dams and the destruction it'll cause on the local streams, rivers, and farmland that'll get inundated under the reservoir sites, it will also, the diversion will lower the Great Salt Lake several feet in elevation. So you got to imagine, you know, looking over the lake, a bird's eye view, it's going to shrink down significantly. Because obviously if you divert the largest water source to the Great Salt Lake, you lower the Great Salt Lake several feet, and that'll dry up tens of thousands of acres of wetlands and have numerous impacts on the migratory birds that depend upon the lake to exist.
What do we have a sense of what percentage of the river's water would be diverted?
Yeah, about 25 to 30% of the river's annual flow would be diverted into a pipe to go for lawn water along the Wasatch Front.
Okay. It'll be used for general municipal purposes, including lawns, right? But the point is that it's water that's being diverted to go down to the Wasatch Front to support growing population and municipalities. But that circles back to your initial comment, Zach, that we use a lot of water per capita in this state. Can you give us a sense of what that number is?
Yeah. So by comparison, so the national average water use, municipal water use, so we're not talking about farms and ranches, we're talking about city water use, and the national average is about 130 gallons per person per day.
Right.
140, depending on the year, but on average it's about 138, I believe.
Yeah.
And Utah's water use on average is about 240 gallons per person per day.
Wow.
Many communities are using 300 or 350 or 400 gallons per person per day. Most of the water we use in our cities is on our lawns.
Right.
Some 70% of the water we use in our cities is for our lawns. And that's why I say it's for lawn water use. You know, we talk about water needs and people think about needs, they think about their indoor water use, but really most of the water we're using in our cities is for our lawn.
And you're right, because up here in Park City, during the summer, some 80 to 90% of daily water use here is for watering lawns, irrigation activities in general. So you're right when you say that a lot of this water goes to watering lawns, which, by the way, is typically growing a non-native species, right? Kentucky bluegrass in a high desert environment that needs a lot of water that we don't get enough natural rainfall to support. So that's why we use a lot of water. Unfortunately, that's a bad habit. That's a bad behavior on our parts.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, I just read a paper on this, and if you think about all the corn grown in the United States, which is a staggering huge acreage of corn grown,
mm-hmm.
Well, Americans grow three times that amount in Kentucky bluegrass by acre, by total acreage. We have three times as much acreage in irrigated lawns as we do in irrigated corn crop. So there's no question that our single largest crop that America grows is Kentucky bluegrass. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with grass per se if people want to have a grass lawn, but you do start to raise questions about whether it's really appropriate to dry up these native ecosystems that our fellow species on this planet rely upon to exist for something that is purely decorative and ornamental.
Yeah.
Zach, I do have a couple questions. With diverting the Bear River, we're going to get 25 to 30% of the river sent to the Wasatch Front for their municipal water needs. Is that going to keep their water costs low, get them lower, increase them? Are we incentivizing any water conservation, or are we just like feeding them more water and keeping prices super low? Is anything changing for those residents that would get water from this project?
Well, Carolyn, that's a great question, and it's really an important one to ask. So, you know, the cost of the project has to be paid for by the recipient to accept the water, meaning the Wasatch Front, if Bear River development is constructed, will have gigantic increases in water rates that to pay for the project, and for that matter, increases in impact fees, which is a fee on new residential growth, and property taxes that we pay on our homes, our businesses, and even our automobiles. So, you know, the $2 billion in construction cost is going to be financed just like a mortgage from a bank. It's going to be financed over 30 years with the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody that knows who buys a house, you know, you buy a $100,000 house, and for 30 years you're going to end up paying, depending on your interest rate, $200,000, $250,000 or more in total payments. And that's the same is true for Bear River Development. The $2.5 billion in construction costs have to be repaid in future water rate increases, impact fee increases, property taxes. And so it's really a shame, because I mentioned the inexpensive alternatives to Bear River Development, and one of the best ones is to raise water rates a little bit to discourage water waste. Instead of charging people $1, $1.20, or $1.50 per 1,000 gallons, which is some of the cheapest water rates in the U.S., us Wasatch Front residents should really be paying more for water so that we use less of it.
Mm.
And that's one of the most important things that's being lost in the water conversation, is the price of water and how we incentivize people to waste water by making it so cheap.
Okay, so let's talk some about some other alternatives, say that you mentioned with respect to this Bear River diversion project. Is there enough water existing that we actually need this Bear River diversion, or do we need some portion of more water to cover the Wasatch Front?
You know, we really don't need Bear River Development in any growth scenario in the next 60 years in northern Utah whatsoever. And the reason is because we have so much water right now. One of the biggest uses of water in our cities right now is a practice called secondary water.
Yes.
Secondary watering is essentially using untreated water systems that are left over from our agricultural era. You know, especially in the Wasatch Front, when you drive around in the late summer, you'll notice there are these canals around. You might just see it as a gutter and drive by and think somebody turned on a fire hydrant.
Mm-hmm.
But we have scores of secondary water systems that are left over from our agricultural era that are delivering untreated water to these suburbs, and they're either flood irrigating grass with it in their homes, or excuse me, outside their homes, mm-hmm. or in local parks and cemeteries, or they are putting it into a sprinkler system, and you'll see signs that say, "Don't drink this water because it's untreated." Those secondary systems, the majority of them, don't have any meters on them, meaning no one really knows how much water they're using, because they're agricultural canal systems that were left over and they never metered them. Mm. Farmers don't meter their water. So the secondary water users, and there's tons of them. In fact, there's more secondary water users here in northern Utah than anywhere else in the U.S. These folks have no idea how much water they use, because no one's tracking their volume of water they use. So there's been a bill at the Utah legislature over the last couple legislative sessions to make those secondary meter systems have meters installed to tell the consumer how much water they're using. And the reason for that is manifold. You know, you can't manage a system that you don't meter. In other words, an unmetered system is an unmanaged system.
Right.
People don't know how much water they're using, and they might use 10 feet of water vertically in a season where they only need a foot or 2 feet. So installing meters is essential, and if meters are installed, the studies done inside Utah show, we could lower water use among those users 30 or 40%. And that's in a massive quantity of water taken when you have hundreds of thousands of acre feet. So that's just one alternative. And just installing meters isn't even charging for use. You know, water is so cheap in those systems. People are paying maybe 20 cents per 1,000 gallons. Maybe they're paying 30 or 40 cents per 1,000 gallons.
Wow.
Water in Park City is easily $5 per 1,000 gallons
yes.
by comparison.
Yeah, we pay for it.
Yeah.
I say we use a lot of it to water lawns, but it comes at a cost, and that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
There should be more of an economic structure to this. Here's another alternative. As an environmental engineer, I've worked on projects where we use reclaimed water, in effect, water that comes out of a treatment plant, a wastewater treatment plant. Is now the technology is available to clean water to a degree that you can reuse it on green spaces, golf courses, homes. My brother who lives in Florida, he waters his lawn with reclaimed water. And Florida, Texas, Arizona, Southern California, all have projects where they're using reclaimed water. And that's something that this state is dragging its feet on, but it needs to think long and hard about as water becomes more and more precious and more expensive. So.
Yeah, there's a variety of amazing technology solutions to provide water, like gray water usage, as you described.
Yes.
There's also just a lot of water that's lost in the system in municipal water supplies, and we don't really have a handle on how much water gets lost from delivery from A to B. And it's not uncommon to see a 10 or 15% loss rate in water. So although people sort of think maybe that the system is really efficient, in reality, it's just an extremely inefficient system. And, you know, and then we have all these inequities where we have large institutions using vast quantities of water, and they're not paying their full share because of the pricing structure.
Yeah.
And so there's just a lot of low-hanging fruit to be plucked to conserve water in Utah and make it more efficient.
Okay, let's wrap up just with Bear River. We're at the bottom of the hour. I got to take a break. But real quick, where does the Bear River project stand as far as design and permitting go?
So the Division of Water Resources is releasing a new report, which will have the engineering, final engineering report for the project, identifying the costs of the selected dam sites they want to build and the pipeline telemetries, where they're going to put it. They've spent almost $40 million on the project now. The proponents of Bear River development have spent almost $40 million, but only about 16 million has been spent on water conservation measures. So once this engineering study is wrapped up, then they will start contemplating how to finance it and initiate permitting.
So it sounds like the Bear River project isn't quite a done deal yet. Sounds like they're still kind of estimating numbers and going back and forth. If I want to get involved and say I'm kind of anti this Bear River development thing, how do I do that? Do I support Utah Rivers Council? Do I start writing my legislatures? What do you recommend for that?
So we have a lot of information about Bear River development on our webpage, which is utahrivers.org. And we've got an alternatives report that lists about 10 alternatives to Bear River development and how to get involved. Contacting state legislators, your legislators at the Utah Legislature, and telling your opposition to Bear River development is definitely the place to start. But we are leading the opposition to the project here at Utah Rivers Council, and we'd love to help you have that conversation with your legislators and or just know how they respond, because they're the ones that are really going to be making the decision about whether to proceed or not.
Zach Frankel, he's the executive director at Utah Rivers Council. We were just talking about the Bear River Diversion Project, and now we're going to turn our attention to what is arguably an even larger and potentially more impactful project, and that's the Lake Powell Pipeline. Now, this one has been around for years, correct, Zach?
Yeah, so the Lake Powell Pipeline was initiated by the legislature, and Utah legislature, in 2006.
Well, okay. So over the last 13 years, this effort to effectively build a pipeline that would carry water from ostensibly Lake Powell, Colorado River Basin, to Washington and Kane County municipalities. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a project to pump 86,000 acre feet of water 2,000 feet up into the air over the mountains and across 140 miles of southern Utah desert to deliver water to St. George, which is currently using water right now in its cities at about 305 gallons per person per day. Again, the national average is about 138, so literally more than twice the U.S. average of water.
And why do they use so much water?
They use that much water because they have some of the cheapest water rates in the United States, even though they are the driest part of Utah itself, the second driest state in the country. The price of water in St. George is about $1.30 per 1,000 gallons. Again, the price of water in Park City is over $5 per 1,000 gallons at some of the initial tiers. And the reason for the cheap water in St. George, it sounds like a good deal, but the truth is that the residents and the businesses, and for that matter, the owners of automobiles, are paying all these property taxes to the local water supplier. And that goes to lower the price of water. In fact, the local water supplier in Washington County gets more money collecting property taxes than it does from selling water. And that's worth just quickly contemplating for a moment. Imagine if Rocky Mountain Power got more money collecting property taxes than selling electricity, how much more electricity people would use because the price of it would be so cheap. Or any other commodity, a natural gas or even a telephone provider. None of those utility providers in Utah collect property taxes except in water. And in the water business, every Utah water wholesaler, the deliverer of water behind the retailer, is collecting a property tax. And sometimes it can be 100% of their revenue stream. And so even though we, as Utahns, sort of pride ourselves on this free market ideology and we claim to embrace the free market, in practice, we have this unique practice of collecting property taxes to lower the price of water and thereby encourage people to use water and use too much water. And that explains why we're the number one highest water user in the country and we have the cheapest water rates in the U.S.
And just to put that in perspective, you said $1.30 per 1,000 gallons,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
That comes to less than a roughly one-tenth of a penny,
yep.
One-tenth of a cent per gallon, okay? For all of you to go out and spend, you know, $1.50 for a gallon of water or something, this is what ratepayers are paying down in St. George or Washington County for the water, less than a penny, less than a half a cent a gallon per gallon. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And it's amazing to see, you know, we were talking water bills earlier in the interview, and, you know, it's not uncommon for a summer water use bill to be 10 times the volume of a winter water use bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these water rates of these water use figures of 305 gallons per person per day in St. George, that's an annual average, which is another way of saying in July, homeowners might use 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 gallons per day.
Wow. They're not growing grass. They're like having their own wetland system.
Maybe they have a pool. I don't know.
Well, but to point it out, that there's a lot of overuse, we'll say, of water down there. And there's a growing population that's occurring, right? Estimates are that there could be as many as half a million people living down in the Washington County area in the next 40 years or so. So there's a growing demand, but you're saying that the demand per person has to come down from that 300 and some gallons per person per day.
It does, and if they reduce their water use just a modest amount, I mean, if they got down to what Las Vegas is using for water, around 180 gallons per person per day, they wouldn't have to tax themselves with the financial debt required to build and the Lake Powell pipeline. And that's the thing, is that we're being penny-wise and pound-foolish in our water pricing policies here in Utah. We have this cheap water, which leads to this high water use, and that high water use is the justification for what is now in the state economy some $4 to $5 billion in new spending that all Utah taxpayers are going to have to loan these poor recipients. I mean, the funny thing about the Lake Powell pipeline discussion is it's being kind of described in state house committees like it's a favor that the taxpayers are doing for Washington County residents. In fact, it's a burden because they're going to have to raise water rates 400, 500, 600% to pay for this boondoggle water project. And instead of having fiscal conservatives in our state house speak out and say, there's inexpensive alternatives to this spending, you know, people are saying, well, we should get this water because it's Utah's water, and the lower basin states of Arizona, Nevada, and California, why they're going to take this Colorado River water if we don't build it. And that's a whole issue. You know, climate change is a major problem in the Colorado.
Right.
It's widely believed that the Colorado River is going to continue declining in flows as a function of decreased snowpacks, which, of course, are a function of increased air temperatures.
Sure.
And, you know, those snowpacks are where we get most of our runoff in the American West. Here along the Wasatch Front, it's 85% of the water we drink, of the water we use in our cities, is coming from snowmelt runoff.
Right.
And the same is true in the Colorado River. And so the last, you know, some 19 years in the Colorado River Basin have been some of the warmest we've seen in the last 1,000 years. And the snowpacks are declining, and there doesn't seem to be an end in sight to that. And so we're having less runoff. So right now, Lake Mead's elevation is forecast to be below the level at which there's enough water, and Arizona is expected to have to walk away from almost 200,000 acre feet in its Colorado River water supply because of climate change.
Right.
And we're coming along and proposing to divert 86,000 acre feet upstream of these lower basin states, pretending like climate change isn't real.
Sure. And of course, in addition to that, in a warmer world, potentially a drier world, the demand goes up too in a warmer world. And demand is going to go up too because of growing populations, just simply growing numbers of people living in the Southwest and throughout the Colorado River watershed.
So yeah, while we're talking about the Southwest, you know, Arizona, Nevada, Colorado over here, are there any states that have tackled this that we're facing, you know, these problems we're facing in Utah? Have they tackled it and they've done it well? You know, is their legislature mm-hmm. taking care of it, found a solution that we should model after? Is everybody kind of facing this realization with climate change and less water in the network?
There's no question that California, Arizona, and Nevada are decades ahead of us in conserving water. Their water rate structures of how much they charge their residents for water are significantly more, especially for large water volume users, entities using more than, you know, 15,000, 20,000, 30,000 gallons are charged significantly more. We're not doing that very frequently here in Utah. They have a range of conservation and efficiency programs outside of water rate structures to encourage people to use less water. Las Vegas and a number of communities in Southern California are paying homeowners to take out their grass,
yep.
to remove their grass. Again, the largest water user in our cities is our grass. And so water suppliers are progressively, in Las Vegas as well, buying out grass because they figure, you know, that's going to save a ton of water, and it's really effective. There's a whole range of indoor plumbing rebate programs. It's all metered water use, unlike Utah's secondary water use like we talked about. This is just a whole suite of programs. But here in Utah, what we have is this special interest that wants this $5 billion in spending is actually working to oppose meaningful water conservation measures. And I know that sounds crazy to hear. Who would really oppose water conservation, something that everybody loves, like, you know, baseball and apple pie? But the entity proposing both Bear River Development and Lake Powell Pipeline, the Division of Water Resources, just released a state water conservation plan, which is proposing to lower our water conservation goal from being 1% per year reduction in our city water use to 0.5% per year reduction in water use. They want us to save less water, even though we are the country's highest per person water users. And we have been trying to yell and scream about this. We've been talking to legislators. We've been issuing press releases. But it's something that is not garnering the attention. The fact that we really aren't working to save water is something that Utahns, we know, are supportive of, but our leaders are not really leading us on progressively to save water on.
So recently, maybe within the past week or so, there was some news about Lake Powell pipeline project. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so a group of economists about 7 years ago released a model, an interactive model, showing how paying for Lake Powell Pipeline will require gigantic increases in water rates, impact fees, and property taxes in Washington County and Kane County. And the auditors, it generated a lot of controversy because the economists found the water rate increases are at least a 500% increase in rates. And so there was a report done by the Legislative Auditor General to look into this, and they estimated that the water rates have to go up 357% inside Washington County, which is just a gigantic amount. I mean, imagine a 350% increase in rates. It's just enormous. And that's what's going to be coming for the future of Washington County residents if they build this unnecessary project. There's a lot of things the report didn't touch upon. It only assumed that they reduced water use by 10 to 25%, which isn't very significant at all.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the biggest issues is the auditors refuse to examine this issue of climate change. You know, what most Western water experts that are not being paid to advance this project believe is that we're going to end up building a $2 billion pipe that we can't really put much water into because of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And so even that's one of the things that the auditors unfortunately didn't look at is climate change. And it's time we as Utahns embrace the fact that all the science is clear. Our air temperatures are increasing and we're going to have less water and we need to start adapting to that world.
All right, last minute or so, what is the status of the Lake Powell Pipeline?
So the Lake Powell Pipeline, the state just withdrew its application for the approval of the project from the federal agency that it spent the last 10 years working to advance. They basically messed up, and the state of Utah realized that the economics don't allow them to generate hydroelectricity. So they withdrew their permit from the federal agency that's been permitting the project, meaning they have to start over. So even though they spent about $38 million to advance that permit, they've scrapped it and they have to start over with other federal agencies. So the next steps for permitting are a bit unclear. We expect another federal entity to step forward and be the federal agency to permit it. What the status of all that $38 million in studies and how much it can be used for the permit is a question that we'll just have to keep you involved in to figure out what that looks like in the future.
All right. Zach Frankel, Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council, thanks so much for joining us. What's the website?
Our website is utahrivers.org.